waiting for a 2-year-old birthday party for the police to come over. I guess they were really loud, huh? VOA1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English on The Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. On the show today, I tell about a couple of new movies. Jill Robbins brings us Ask a Teacher. And we close the show with An American Story, The Last Leaf by O. Henry. But first,
the time of growing human populations may be ending, a new study shows. And that move will affect society, the economy, and the environment. Today, the world is home to about 7.8 billion people. The study found that the world's population may top out at 9.7 billion on or around the year 2064. But researchers think it could shrink to 8.8 billion by the end of the century. The findings appeared in the medical publication The Lancet. The numbers come from the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation at the University of Washington in Seattle. Those estimates disagree with the findings of the United Nations Population Division. Its experts expect the population in 2100 to be 10.9 billion and rising. UN Population Division Chief John Wilmoth has called the new estimates extreme. If the study proves to be correct, however, the changes brought on by a shrinking population could be great. I think this is one of the more profound changes that's faced humanity ever, said Chris Murray. He is the director of the IHME and a co-author of the study. The new estimates would be great news for the environment. Fewer people would make fewer pollutants, for example. This would lower demand for food, reducing the demand that agriculture puts on land and water. But a shrinking population could be very bad for the economy. Decreasing populations mean fewer people are working, which means lower gross domestic product. It also means fewer people are able to buy things, and buying things is the basis of the international economy. What happens when you don't have young people buying their first house, buying the first car? Asked Daryl Bricker. He is co-writer of the book Empty Planet, The Shock of Global Population Decline. Bricker was not involved in the study. Also, populations age as birth rates fall. This is actually more serious than just simple population decline, said Zhenqiao Xian, a sociology professor at Brown University in Rhode Island. He was also not involved with the research. A smaller workforce would be supporting a larger population of older adults, Xian said. He added that this puts great demands on paying for health care and social programs. Population decreases could also have geopolitical effects. Fewer workers also mean fewer soldiers, Murray said. The balance of power between nation-states has always been related in some way to the size of the working-age population, he said. Birth rates have been decreasing worldwide because women are getting more education and face fewer restrictions on birth control. It's really a story about female empowerment, Bricker said. The main difference between the IHME estimate and the UN study is what researchers expect will happen after birth rates hit bottom. Population numbers change little when women have about 2 children each. This is known as the replacement rate. Across wealthier countries, the average birth rate is more like 1.6. The UN believes birth rates will rise again over time to 1.75. But Chris Murray disagrees. We see no sign of that, he said. He believes that decreasing birth rates in places like Japan and parts of Europe will expand to other countries. By 2100, his group estimates that nearly every country in the world would be below the replacement rate. Populations in 23 countries, including Japan, Thailand, and Spain, would be half what they were in 2017. But only if Murray and IHME researchers are right. The UN's John Wilmuth notes that both groups are basing their projections on what's still early experience in the lives of a few countries. So there's great uncertainty about that, he said. We will know much more about that in 10 or 20 years, he added. But for now, we're both guessing. Murray said countries will have 3 ways to keep their populations from decreasing. One is to make it easier for women to work and have children, he said. Most countries have policies to help working mothers, he added, but that alone does not bring the birth rate to the replacement rate. The second way is to open their borders to immigration. But many governments, including the Trump administration in the United States, are not open to increased immigration. Anger about the European Union's migration policies was a major issue in Britain's vote to leave the EU. Finally, some countries might decide to take away women's reproductive health rights in an effort to pressure them to have more children. He called that third way very undesirable. I'm Susan Shand.
COVID-19 has forced movie makers away from traditional releases at theaters across the United States and in other countries. But 2 American media companies have captured the summer blockbuster tradition with new films. Netflix released The Old Guard, an action superhero film from critically acclaimed director Gina Prince Bythewood. And Hulu targeted the romantic comedy market with the release of Palm Springs from director Max Barbico. Both Hulu and Netflix report that large numbers of people have visited the media sites to watch the films since their release a week ago. The Old Guard stars Academy Award winner Charlize Theron and newcomer Kiki Layne as members of a team of immortals, people who cannot die. The immortals have fought in many wars over the centuries to protect humanity. They have somehow kept their special powers known only to themselves. But now their secret is out and under threat. Gina Prince-Bythewood is best known for her film Love and Basketball, which she wrote as well as directed. The Old Guard, however, is based on a comic book, a short story of few words with pictures on every page. Its writer, Greg Rucka, reworked the story for the film version. The superheroes of the Old Guard do not wear special clothing, fly through the air, or possess X-ray eyesight. And unlike traditional heroes, they are not always sure their special power serves them well. In fact, Theron's character questions if immortality is a curse or a blessing. The Old Guard's superheroes are more real, more like normal human beings. They get tired. They feel hopeless. They fight on. In the age of COVID-19, that might be their appeal to critics and other movie watchers. Palm Springs seems to hit a similar note on the current health reality in our world today. Actors Kristen Milioti and Andy Samberg play guests at a wedding party in Palm Springs, a beautiful California town popular with travelers. But its appeal shrinks quickly for Milioti and Samberg's characters, who are stuck in a time loop experience together. They wake up on the same day over and over. The two characters in this dark comedy fall in love during their never-ending day of no responsibilities in the perfect vacation town. But the trap of the day-in, day-out repetitive nature of their experience is deeply trying and tiring. And that is something many people can relate to right now, trapped in their homes for months to avoid the new coronavirus.
This week, we received a question from Rose in Brazil. She asks, I would like to know the difference between after and afterward, and how I can use both correctly. Besides that, I would like to know if there's a difference between afterwards and afterward. Thanks in advance, Rose, Brazil. Dear Rose, you have asked about two words that seem very similar, but they are in fact used differently. After has many uses in English. It can be used as an adverb, a conjunction, a preposition, or even a noun. First, I will explain how it is used as an adverb. The adverb after means following in time or at a later time. Notice that this can be used in the same way you use the word later. She returned from the trip 1 year after. It is probably more common to use after as a preposition. It means at a time following, as in these sentences. My brother was born 5 years after my parents' wedding. The bus arrives at 5 minutes after 2 o'clock. And after is also used as a conjunction. That is, it joins together two ideas in one sentence. Don't tell them until after they have had lunch. Now on to afterward. Afterward is only used as an adverb. It helps describe an action that happens at a later time. Kai got the job and received a promotion afterward. You may have seen afterward with an S at the end. This form is more common in British English and less formal American English. There is no difference in meaning between afterwards and afterward. You may hear, "Why don't we take her to lunch afterwards?" Both afterward and afterwards can be used in the same way you would use the word later. But after has many more uses than these two forms. That's Ask a Teacher for this week. What question do you have about English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. I'm Jill Robbins.
Many artists lived in the Greenwich Village area of New York. Two young women named Sue and Johnsy shared a studio apartment at the top of a three-story building. Johnsy's real name was Joanna. In November, a cold, unseen stranger came to visit the city. This disease, pneumonia, killed many people. Johnsy lay on her bed, hardly moving. She looked through the small window. She could see the side of the brick house next to her building. One morning, a doctor examined Johnsy and took her temperature. Then he spoke with Sue in another room. "She has one chance in, let us say, 10, he said, "and that chance is for her to want to live. Your friend has made up her mind that she is not going to get well. Has she anything on her mind?" She wanted to paint the Bay of Naples in Italy someday, said Sue. "Paint?" said the doctor. "Bosh! Has she anything on her mind worth thinking twice? A man, for example?" "A man," said Sue, "is a man worth... But no, doctor, there is nothing of the kind." "I will do all that science can do," said the doctor. "But whenever my patient begins to count the carriages at her funeral, I take away 50% from the curative power of medicines." After the doctor had gone, Sue went into the workroom and cried. Then she went to Johnsy's room with her drawing board, whistling Ragtime. Johnsy lay with her face toward the window. Sue stopped whistling, thinking she was asleep. She began making a pen and ink drawing for a story in a magazine. Young artists must work their way to art by making pictures for magazine stories. Sue heard a low sound, several times repeated. She went quickly to the bedside. Johnsy's eyes were open wide. She was looking out the window and counting backward. 12, she said, and a little later, 11, and then 10, and 9, and then 8 and 7, almost together. Sue looked out the window. What was there to count? There was only an empty yard and the blank side of the house 7 meters away. An old ivy vine, going bad at the roots, climbed halfway up the wall. The cold breath of autumn had stricken leaves from the plant until its branches, almost bare, hung on the bricks. "What is it, dear?" asked Sue. "Six," said Jauncey quietly. "They're falling faster now. 3 days ago, there were almost 100. It made my head hurt to count them. But now, it's easy. There goes another one. There are only 5 left now." "Five what, dear?" asked Sue. "Leaves on the plant. When the last one falls, I must go too. I've known that for 3 days. Didn't the doctor tell you?"
"Oh, I never heard of such a thing," said Sue. "What have old ivy leaves to do with your getting well? And you used to love that vine. Don't be silly. Why, the doctor told me this morning that your chances for getting well real soon were, let's see exactly what he said. He said, the chances were 10 to 1. Try to eat some soup now, and let me go back to my drawing so I can sell it to the magazine and buy food and wine for us." "You needn't get any more wine," said Jauncey, keeping her eyes fixed out the window. "There goes another one. No, I don't want any soup. That leaves just 4. I want to see the last one fall before it gets dark. Then I'll go, too." "Jauncey, dear," said Sue, "will you promise me to keep your eyes closed and not look out the window until I'm done working? I must hand those drawings in by tomorrow." "Tell me as soon as you have finished," said Jauncey, closing her eyes and lying white and still as a fallen statue. "I want to see the last one fall. I'm tired of waiting. I'm tired of thinking. I want to turn loose my hold on everything and go sailing down, down, just like one of those poor, tired leaves." "Try to sleep," said Sue. "I must call Mr. Behrman up to be my model for my drawing of an old miner. Don't try to move until I come back." Old Behrman was a painter who lived on the ground floor of the apartment building. Behrman was a failure in art. For years, he had always been planning to paint a work of art, but had never yet begun it. He earned a little money by serving as a model to artists who could not pay for a professional model. He was a fierce little old man who protected the 2 young women in the studio apartment above him. Sue found Behrman in his room. In one area was a blank canvas that had been waiting 25 years for the first line of paint. Sue told him about Jauncey and how she feared that her friend would float away like a leaf. Old Behrman was angered at such an idea.
"Are there people in the world with the foolishness to die because leaves drop off a vine? Why do you let that silly business come in her brain?"
"She is very sick and weak," said Sue, "and the disease has left her mind full of strange ideas."
"This is not any place in which one so good as Miss Jauncey shall lie sick," yelled Behrman. "Some day I will paint a masterpiece, and we shall all go away."
Jauncey was sleeping when they went upstairs. Sue pulled the shade down to cover the window. She and Behrman went into the other room. They looked out a window fearfully at the ivy vine. Then they looked at each other without speaking. A cold rain was falling, mixed with snow. Behrman sat and posed as the miner. The next morning, Sue awoke after an hour's sleep. She found Johnsy with wide-open eyes staring at the covered window.
"Pull up the shade. I want to see," she ordered quietly.
Sue obeyed. After the beating rain and fierce wind that blew through the night, there yet stood against the wall one ivy leaf. It was the last one on the vine. It was still dark green at the center, but its edges were colored with the yellow. It hung bravely from the branch about 7 meters above the ground.
"It is the last one," said Johnsy. "I thought it would surely fall during the night. I heard the wind. It will fall today, and I shall die at the same time."
"Dear, dear," said Sue, leaning her worn face toward the bed. "Think of me, if you won't think of yourself. What would I do?" But Johnsy did not answer. The next morning, when it was light, Johnsy demanded that the window shade be raised. The ivy leaf was still there. Johnsy lay for a long time looking at it. And then she called to Sue, who was preparing chicken soup.
"I've been a bad girl," said Johnsy. "Something has made that last leaf stay there to show me how bad I was. It is wrong to want to die. You may bring me a little soup now."
An hour later, she said,
"Someday I hope to paint the Bay of Naples."
Later in the day, the doctor came, and Sue talked to him in the hallway.
"Even chances," said the doctor. "With good care, you'll win. And now I must see another case I have in your building. Behrman, his name is. Some kind of an artist, I believe. Pneumonia, too. He is an old, weak man, and his case is severe. There's no hope for him, but he goes to the hospital today to ease his pain."
The next day, the doctor said to Sue, "She's out of danger. You won. Nutrition and care now. That's all." Later that day, Sue came to the bed where Johnsy lay and put one arm around her.
"I have something to tell you, White Mouse," she said. "Mr. Behrman died of pneumonia today in the hospital. He was sick only 2 days. They found him the morning of the first day in his room downstairs, helpless with pain. His shoes and clothing were completely wet and icy cold. They could not imagine where he had been on such a terrible night. And then they found a lantern, still lighted, and they found a ladder that had been moved from its place, and art supplies and a painting board with green and yellow colors mixed on it. And look out the window, dear, at the last ivy leaf on the wall. Didn't you wonder why it never moved when the wind blew? Oh, darling, it is Behrman's masterpiece. He painted it there the night that the last leaf fell."
And that's our show. Thanks for joining us. I'm Katie Weaver.